Today we're going to continue with Acts chapter 15, and we're picking up in verse 4. And what has transpired to get to this point is Paul and Barnabas had come off of their first missionary journey, and they had been here at Antioch for a year to year and a half teaching them. And everything was going well by all accounts, and of course the absence of saying anything to the contrary. So things were going well until there was a group of men that came from the Jerusalem congregation that came up to Antioch, and they were falsely teaching, and now Antioch, of course, this was a Gentile congregation, mostly completely Gentiles here in this Gentile Roman city, the third largest city in the Roman Empire. And here these Jewish Christians came up to Antioch telling them that they had to be following the law of Moses and they had to be circumcised in order to become Christians and before they could become Christians, which was not God's teaching at all. This was man's teaching, man's false teaching, and this is what they were spreading. And they not only sent this group to Antioch, but there had been a delegation come from Jerusalem that went to the places that Paul and Barnabas had evangelized and taught in here in Asia Minor, but it was the Galatian region is what they called this portion, but the in the congregations of Antioch, Iconia, Lystra, and Derbe, they had sent a delegation to these congregations teaching them the same false teaching, which they were believing. Now, to the credit of the congregation of Antioch, they didn't buy into it. Now, they did have Paul there that strongly opposed and ran these men back to Jerusalem, and then that wasn't the end. And then we're getting the second part here in Acts 15. But because of the turmoil and false teaching that was spread by these men from Jerusalem here in the Galatian region, at least these four congregations in Asia Minor that Paul and Barnabas had evangelized over the previous 3 years or so, then Paul had to write a strongly worded letter that we now know as Galatians, as the book of Galatians. That's what he wrote to straighten them out of this false teaching, telling them this was nothing about what Paul and Barnabas, Barnabas and I had taught you. Why are you following this false teaching? And so it's very strongly worded to the congregations of the Galatian region. And but that's the reason for it. Now, here, and then also, besides this, whenever these men showed up at Antioch, then Paul and Barnabas both stopped eating with the Gentile Christians here at Antioch. And that really brought the ire out of Paul. And he went and confronted Peter to his face, telling him how wrong that was. And to Peter's credit, you know, he had several failings. And this is another point of failure that he had. But he corrected it quickly after Paul pointed it out and confronted him to his face. Okay, now where we are, after this confrontation that Paul had with Peter, we get all this from Galatians chapter 2. Paul tells us, we don't get it here from this Acts 15 account. So the precursor to Acts 15 is Galatians chapter 2 that we've covered. It's probably been a month ago or so now. But then God sent a direct revelation to Paul and told him to go to Jerusalem to straighten out this congregation and to stop this false teaching and correct this false teaching and stop them from teaching this to other people, this message that did not come from God. This is coming from these men out of this congregation. And so that is where we are now. So Paul and others, Barnabas is one, and Silas and maybe even Titus are also in this. But we know that Barnabas and Silas and probably others that Luke did not tell us, but they have traveled down this 300-mile territory and now with verse 4 have entered into Jerusalem to have a conference. That's what it's known as, is a conference in Jerusalem, but really it's a meeting. And it's been misunderstood, mistaught all through the centuries and millennia of what this meeting was. The wrong teaching is that this congregation at Jerusalem was dictating what all of the other Gentile congregations would be believing. And that was not it at all. The reason for this meeting, God sent Paul down to Jerusalem to correct the Jerusalem congregation, not for the congregation at Jerusalem to make some announcement and a statement and correct all these other congregations and set down guidelines of what they're going to do to follow. That was not the reason for it. It is to straighten out the false teaching that's coming right out of the Jerusalem congregation. And that's why God sent Paul down there, is to straighten this out. Now, also, one more thing that we got from Galatians chapter 2. Before the meeting started with the congregation at Jerusalem, Paul had a meeting with Peter, John, those two apostles, and the elder James, who was Jesus' brother, half-brother. And he had a meeting with those three. So those four had a meeting, and Paul tells us that in Galatians 2. Before this meeting here with the congregation at Jerusalem, and everyone was on the same page. That's why everything is so harmonious, even though at least Peter and James were accepting this false teaching that these men here at the Jerusalem congregation were teaching. It's all straightened out before this meeting. And so then they accept this divine message that God sent to Paul. And so now they conform, and that's why we hear Peter and James both give these speeches, these statements that they make here in Acts 15. And it's completely harmonious with what Paul had taught previously and what he was teaching the Galatians, a corrective teaching, in Galatians chapter 2. And so then that is where we will pick up here with verse 4. Are there any questions or comments on any of this? And do you know what Peter's strongest attribute was that allowed him to receive the forgiveness and grace from the Messiah? His forgiveness. He saw when it was pointed out to him quickly the error that he was making. He was quick to repent. He prayed to God and asked forgiveness. He changed the sinful way that he was doing. He changed it and stopped it immediately, you know, 180 degrees, go the other direction, get on the right course, and then he prayed to God, asked for forgiveness, and he would receive it. It's the same thing that happens with us. Now, we will not receive that grace and forgiveness of our sins if we don't stop that sinful behavior and then ask God for forgiveness. So that's the strength. You know, there's weaknesses with Peter, but that's his strength, and that should be our strength too. James and John,
right. That's right. That's right. And that would have been to their detriment. Yes. 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 I know. Now, the addendum to this is 5 years later, when we get to Acts 21 and 22, they have reverted back to the old covenant. And so then they're abiding by the old covenants, Nazarite law, and as sacrifices. And for some unexplained reason that Kaufman said he doesn't understand, James is even able to come up with a foolhardy, a foolish plan that Paul even goes along with. And it results in, what could be considered a disaster. His arrest. Now, who knows? Maybe this was all the providence of God. One thing is, what my thought is, Acts 21, 22, he's arrested, but these Jews were going to kill him. And so that might have been God's avenue to keep him alive, because he's in prison for 4 years in Roman custody, and the Jews could not get to him. So that might have been the providence of God, but it all was started by a foolhardy, a foolish plan that was following the old covenant that was all abolished. So, by Nazarite vows, and somehow convinced Paul to go along with that. But anyway, that, you know, that's in the future that we'll be covering, Acts 21 and 22. It's Paul. Uh-huh. And then Paul gets arrested over this foolhardy plan. It's whenever they come off of the third, Paul and Silas come off the third missionary journey and bring the funds that they'd collected into Jerusalem. And then James meets him and said, oh, hey, there's all kind of a turmoil, and here's the plan that I have for you to make everything all right. Well, it didn't. It was a firestorm. And then the Jews were going to kill Paul, but the Romans saved his life right there on the steps going to the fortress of Antonia, which was the fortress that the Roman soldiers were staying in. They were going to kill him right there, but the Roman soldiers quickly, it was like first responders, all hands on deck, and they went and fought back all the Jews and saved Paul's life. And he was, and that's exactly the point and the time that he tells it's not the centurion, but it's the commander. It's the one that's over all the centurions. The chief man in Jerusalem, the head man, he tells him that he's a Roman citizen, and which scares him, because they, by that time, they had already beaten Paul ahead of that. And anyway, that was could have been the death penalty, but Paul didn't push anything on that. And he gained the respect of these Roman commanders. And we see that then through the rest of the chapter. And how, and then obviously Paul is teaching them all the way through. And Kaufman states at the end of the book, you know, hopefully, here they've heard so much teaching for 4 years. They've been here with Paul, and, you know, different ones changed out and whatnot. But surely, at least some of those became Christians. Surely, hopefully. And I'm going to say more, very likely that they did. They heard the Apostle Paul for 4 years. They witnessed miracles that he performed. There was no reason for them not to have become Christians. Oh, no. He withstood Peter to the face. That's what he tells us in Galatians 2. Paul said, I withstood Peter to the face to correct him by what he was doing. Peter,
was eating with the Gentiles, no problem, here in Antioch whenever he came up from Jerusalem. Everything was going well until these men from Jerusalem came up here. And then Peter stopped eating. And then, unfortunately, even Barnabas stopped eating with the Gentiles. And so they'd only eat with Jews. And they were shunning themselves away from these Gentile Christians. And that's when Paul grabbed Peter, took him aside, and he stated that he confronted him to his face about this sinful activity, this wrong demonstration, and this mistreatment of these Gentile Christians. And so, no, Paul didn't go along with any falseness or sinful activity that Peter ever did. Okay. Okay, you're talking in Acts 21, and that was with James. And not yet, that was James at that point of Acts 21. And I don't know, you know, Kaufman studied this for years and decades and lifetime, and his conclusion was he doesn't know why Paul went along with it. So I don't know. It was just some kind of a plan to smooth things over. And, you know, we'll get to that in the future. But I don't know. It did not smooth anything over. It created a firestorm with the Jews. I don't know. Paul, for some unknown reason, he went along with and went through this Nazarite vow foolishly, even though it. And I don't know. We'll cover that and the different things that Paul had to do, which was against the teachings of the New Testament that he had to do in order to go through this Nazarite vow. But here. Yeah, Paul is the shining star here in Acts 15, and he, correcting Peter, correcting James, correcting Barnabas, and Barnabas and Paul are going to have a parting of their ways here at the end of this chapter. It's not stated that it's over this. It's stated that it's over Barnabas's nephew, John Mark, but I really think that this was, at the very least, a crack, and probably started even more of a rift right here, because it's Paul stated that he confronted Peter to the face, but here his companion that he had for the last 3-4 years just immediately reverted and went against him. Paul didn't forget that, so I'm going to say that. Plus, with John Mark, that those two things were reasons of the rift that happens. And then they separate, which, you know, maybe it was for the best. It definitely wasn't a negative, because now then Paul and Silas went on their second missionary journey and went all over Greece, whereas then it was Barnabas and John Mark went to Cyprus, to their home island, and they were able to evangelize there. So they just split up. And they were able to cover, you know, twice the territory. So that maybe was God's will. It was ready for the... And then now they had Silas, who was being able to be trained by the Apostle Paul. So, and he became an invaluable resource and a worker in God's kingdom for the future. So, things that have negative connotation happen, but then the end result was even more teaching and more area covered. So probably some of this was the providence of God, even though it was unfortunate circumstances of how it happened. But any other questions or comments? No. Yes. No grapes. See, that's a major thing. So for that 7 days that he took the vow, he could not partake of the Lord's Supper. See, that was a major thing that Kaufman brings up in here. And I don't know, Kaufman does not know why Paul accepted and, you know, to go through this 7-day vow. But yeah, you know, in Samuel, that you mentioned two of the three perpetual Nazarites that were mentioned in the Bible. Yeah, it's Samson and Samuel and John the Immerser. John the Baptist, John the Immerser, those are the three perpetual Nazarites that their parents dedicated to God before they were born, and their entire lives until they died, they went through, they abided by the Nazarite vow. And so those three are the most famous for this Nazarite vow. But then Paul agreed through James's plan to go through a week of this in the future. But my point is about this. They abide by and take the teaching now of Paul, Peter, and James. These are the three. And Barnabas also speaks in here. We don't get their words, just mentioned that they speak to the multitude. But those four we know spoke. We don't know about John, the Apostle John, but he's here. I just don't know if it's not mentioned that he speaks here, but the congregation does take this corrective teaching, at least right now, but we know from evidence of what happens 5 years into the future, so it'll be 55 AD. We're at 50 AD right here in Acts 15. In 55 AD, they reverted back to the old law again, unfortunately. So, you know, recidivism is a hard thing. It's an unfortunate trait of mankind, and it takes a lot of willpower, a lot of strength, a lot of spiritual strength here in this context to be able to hold back against reverting back to sinful activity. But anyway, these are all good points. Any other questions or comments?